Welcome to The Market, sponsored by the CME Group, Dateline Chicago, Friday, July 1st. Hello again, Orion Samuelson here with you for this holiday weekend, and Max Armstrong is away on this holiday weekend, but we hope you have a happy and safe 4th of July holiday. But now let's look back a week. You remember what was happening a week ago today on Wall Street, in the global market, around the world. The vote for Great Britain to leave the European Union was in, and the markets collapsed and fell apart. And if ever there is yet one more example of not selling in a panic sell market, we saw it happen again this past week. Because today, for the fourth straight day, the stock indices rose modestly. Today, helped by encouraging U.S. manufacturing data. But the S&P 500 has tallied its best week since November, staging a strong rebound from that two-day decline, the worst in 10 months, sparked by the British vote last week. But one trader said clearly people have assessed that either one, it's not a big deal, or two, it's not going to happen at all, and they are positioning according to those views. So for the day today, seven of the 10 major S&P sectors ended higher, with the consumer discretionary group's 0.9% rise leading the gainers. Again today, though, financials were the worst-performing group, down 0.5%, but that's the segment that was hit hard by the Brexit vote last week. But when you take into account the rebound in the market this week, the S&P 500 is up nearly 3% for the year and ended the week less than 30 points from its record closing high. Some of the data today, U.S. factory activity expanded at a healthy pace in June as new orders, output, and exports rose. Government bond yields around the world hit their lowest levels in years. And the automobile industry, it looks like, had their best June sales month since back in 2005. As a result, Ford shares went up 1.2%. General Motors shares, even though their sales were down slightly for the month, gained 2.1%. And the big story of an individual stock today was Harley-Davidson. It was up nearly 20%. After market chatter, not substantiated, that the motorcycle company might be a takeover project or target. The stock was the top percentage gainer on the S&P. So once again, reviewing the gains for the week. The Dow up 3.1%, the S&P 500 up 3.2%, and the NASDAQ climbed 3.3%. And as I said earlier, the S&P 500, its biggest weekly percentage gain since November. Factory activity expanded at a healthy pace in June, and Ford Motor Company and Fiat Chrysler reported June sales gains of 6.4% and 6.5% respectively, while General Motors reported a decline of 1.6%. But all in all, a pretty good week, and once again, we've seen a major recovery from that two-day sell-off that we saw last week, Thursday and Friday, in the global market activity. The oil market jumped today. Brent crude posted its largest weekly gain since mid-May. The market shook off a closely followed industry report that showed a fourth weekly increase out of the last 5 weeks in the number of U.S. oil rigs operating. According to oil services firm Baker Hughes, producers added 11 oil rigs this week, and that's the biggest increase since December. So U.S. crude, West Texas Intermediate, up 66 cents for the day, settling at the end of the week at $48.99. As we look at some of the other activity this week, Canadian banks coming more and more into the United States. BMO Harris Bank, of course. That was the Harris Bank purchased by BMO, but this week, Canadian Bank bought another U.S. bank. Canadian Imperial Bank of Commerce said it would buy Chicago-based Private Bank Corp. in a cash and stock deal valued at about $3.8 billion so they could expand their business. And then another purchase this week, Medtronic. And Medtronic plays a role in my life because I have a pacemaker. And if you have a pacemaker, Medtronic certainly plays a part in your life. But Medtronic said it would buy Heartware International for about $1.1 billion to strengthen its portfolio of devices aimed at treating heart disease. Anybody who owned Heartware International before that announcement had a very good day back on the 27th of June because the bid, the offer, set a premium of 93.5% to Heartware's close a week ago of $29.98. And with that announcement, Heartware shares jumped to 57.3 in pre-market trade on Monday. But there are some mergers that were attempted and didn't happen. The Hershey Company said Thursday it had rejected a $23 billion preliminary offer by Mondelez International that would seek to expand the Mondelez limited U.S. footprint and create the world's largest confectioner. The snub underscores the challenges that Mondelez faces in wooing Hershey's controlling shareholder, the Hershey Trust, a $12 billion charity created by the company's founder a century ago. Mondelez is the second largest confectionery company globally, while Hershey ranks number five. Hershey shares rose 16% on that news. Mondelez still up 6.2%. But looking at the story of mergers and acquisitions for this quarter coming to an end, not happening as much as previous quarter or in past years, apparently the global economy becoming a worry to investors in companies that are looking at expensive buyouts and takeovers and mergers. The value of announced mergers and acquisitions worldwide dropped by one-third in the second quarter as a wave of transactions were abandoned in the wake of concerns over regulatory and tax risks or national security. So while 2015 was a record year for mergers and acquisitions, 2016 is shaping up to be a record year for broken deals. And we review some of them, I had forgotten some of the deals that were attempted and didn't happen. Last year's biggest deal, U.S. drug maker Pfizer, $160 billion agreement to acquire Dublin, Ireland-based maker of Botox, Allergan. It was abandoned in April after the U.S. Treasury introduced new rules to curb so-called inversions that are used by companies to lower their bills by re-domiciling overseas. And then there was U.S. oilfield services providers Halliburton Company and Baker Hughes that last month terminated their $38 billion merger deal with opposition from U.S. and European antitrust regulators. And in February, Philips canceled a planned $2.8 billion sale of its lighting components unit to a consortium led by China's Go Scale Capital, after the Committee on Foreign Investment in the U.S., which scrutinizes deals on national security grounds, objected. The second quarter's biggest deal? Well, it hasn't happened yet, but the deal is German chemicals and life sciences company Bayer making a $62 billion offer for Monsanto Company, the world's biggest seed company. And those two companies have yet to successfully negotiate a deal. So after declining to 25% in 2015, and that was their lowest level since 2006, bid premiums increased to 34% this year in those attempted mergers and acquisitions. And looking back a week ago to the Brexit vote, which tore global markets apart, sent retired people living on their stock portfolios into the selling end of the market, we did have an after effect that maybe a lot of people didn't expect. U.S. and Chinese online travel sites have reported a sales jump in queries about United Kingdom holidays since Britain made that vote last week. Travel agents, hotel chains, and airlines say it's too early to tell if the vote will impact bookings in the longer term, but inquiries certainly jumped as travelers hunted for cheaper breaks. Britain's decision, of course, to pull out of the European Union leaves the world's fifth largest economy facing some deep uncertainty. But inquiries from China and the U.S. picked up rather sharply. So, a lot going on in the economy of the globe, and going into this holiday trading weekend, a lot of traders reluctant to take major positions because in a three-day period, the way this world is going, we can have a catastrophe, we can have an assassination, we can have a terrorist attack that could shake up the market. So there are probably some traders on the 4th of July weekend trying to enjoy it, but still worrying about what's happening around the world. There were a couple of other big reports this week affecting all of us because it affected food. The grain stocks report issued on Thursday, and then the planted acreage report that was also issued on Thursday. All of those numbers came in bigger than the trade was expecting. And when we come back, we're going to talk to Paul Georgi of Allendale, based in McHenry, Illinois, about the impact of those two reports that came out just a few days ago. So stay with us for that when we continue on The Market, sponsored by the CME Group.
For more than 150 years, CME Group has been built with your confidence. Without it, we simply wouldn't be in business. Today, we continue to work on new and better ways to protect you and grow your confidence in the markets. After all, it's our vigilance that brings you the peace of mind you need today and in the future. CME Group. Advance with confidence.
Paul Georgi of Allendale, based in McHenry, Illinois, joined us in our studio on Thursday after the big June reports were issued to talk about the impact of the acreage and the grain stocks report. Any surprises for you, Paul?
Well, I think the surprise for the trade was certainly the larger corn acres than they had expected. Most in the trade were looking for a 700 million acre decrease in corn acres, and here we come in with what was that, about a million or 400,000 acres more. So that's about a million acres shift than what the trade was expecting. It shouldn't excite people too much, though, because in our analysis, even at current yield, a million acre shift in corn amounts to about 77 million acres to the bottom line, an increase in ending stocks. So that was certainly a surprise. I think the soybean number, you had to anticipate how much the trade thought was in the market already. A lot of people in the trade was thinking 2 million acres, 2.5 million acre increase. It only came in at like 1.5 increase. So that got the beans a little bit excited, thinking that we're not going to have enough beans to go around now. So it's going to take a few days to settle out, but the problem that we've got here is we're going into a long weekend. Yep. We don't start trading again till Tuesday morning, and then you've got weather forecasts that every trader is going to be looking at. Has there been any change? Is it going to be hot and later on in July? Is the corn going to pollinate? The beans going to pod and so forth? So we've got several weeks of pretty exciting markets here, I think.
I was a little surprised by the immediate results on the trading floor. Soybeans considerably higher right after the report came out. Corn down, of course. But is that supply situation in soybeans the reason that we're seeing that?
I think so. I think the supply situation in soybeans is getting tighter and tighter. And at the pace that we're going and the direction we're going, we're continuing to see all this demand from China, and any disruption in bean yields could create some tightness in bean supplies, and that could continue to drive bean prices up. But I think the reaction after that report came because of the trade was expecting bigger numbers in yield and or in soybean plantings, and they weren't quite that big. And they were expecting all these acres to shift from corn to go to beans. That didn't happen. So I think, you know, we'll see how it settles out here in the next couple trading sessions.
Whenever we come to the 4th of July weekend, I'm reminded of 1988, the drought year where in June we watched prices in the grain market limit up, limit up, limit up. And I recall it vividly because on the 4th of July weekend, I was in England leading a tour of Case IH tractor owners to visit the plant over there. And all of them, of course, were in the market and were confident, since it didn't rain over the 4th of July weekend, we'd continue to see more limit up moves. And when the market opened after the 4th of July weekend, down limit 3 days in a row, and they're stunned. And I said, you're going to run out of buyers sooner or later. And apparently that's what happened then, but I'll never forget.
The sad thing is I've been in the business that long myself, so I do remember that as well. And I don't think we have quite that emotion going into this July 4th weekend, but we do have emotion. We've got, you know, how many more buyers can we have come into this market? And that's the thing that concerns me. When I look at can we get soybean prices back up to the $12 area or corn back to $4.50, this impact from the British vote of exiting the EU and that fallout that we have not seen yet causes a lot of investor money to not come back in the market or to stay in very protective risk-off type situations. So that we've lost that money or that enthusiasm, that fuel to drive this market higher. And that concerns me about how high we can go now. So what I'm telling my guys, we got to be prepared for excitement, but you also got to take advantage of selling this thing into rallies at this point in time.
Last week, the week before, we had the pig crop report, quarterly pig crop report, came in with some bigger numbers there as well. Will this report this week have much of an impact on cattle and hog prices?
I don't think so. I think the USDA grain report says that we've got a lot of grain around, so that's good. There's some profitability potential for the livestock producer on the input cost, the feed cost side of things. The bottom line for livestock producers, or especially hog producers, is China. They reduce their size of their herd so dramatically that they need pork. And the U.S. is certainly a market where they can get it from. And we have been exporting a lot of pork to China. And we can afford to continue to build our herds as long as China buys. The problem that we get into is, you know, like that day in July in 1988 in the soybean market, it's when China decides, well, we don't need any more of that. Now we're holding the bag on it, and we're going to have to consume it ourselves, and that could hurt prices. But I think that's some time down the road. But near term, I think we can afford to increase our sow herd and not hurt prices a whole lot for the next several quarters.
As we go through the growing season into harvest in South America, they'll be going to looking ahead to the planting season. Will this report have much of an impact on Argentina or Brazil planting?
Well, it might have impact there. If bean prices stay strong, you're going to see the prices in South America increase, and that's going to drive more planting soybeans. One of the big concerns right now is the Argentina situation. Just a report this week, one of the seed corn companies in Argentina said sales are up like 30%. I'm planting more corn than they did a year ago because they took the export tax off. So farmers are planting a lot more corn. That's going to amount to maybe 5 to 7 million metric tons more exports coming out of Argentina next year. So those are the kind of things that will impact U.S. farmers because of the incentive and the ability for these South American producers to continue to grow more crop. Now, the situation in Brazil is much more chaotic because they've got a political system there that trying to find its way. Corn prices and corn basis and prices out of Brazil has come down to where they're now cheaper than U.S. corn because they caught themselves in a real tight situation shipping out too much when harvest before harvest. So that's settling down. So the exchange rate of the currency, I think, is something we haven't talked about, but that's another factor that's going to impact that South America crop as much as anything.
One producer wanted to know if I thought Brexit would have a long-term effect on our commodity prices. I just don't see that happening because we're coming back.
Yeah, I don't think it has a long-term on commodity prices, on grain prices anyway. I think, the currency wars that we've been having for a year or so now will probably pick up because it's the EU, if the EU currency continues to slide, that's going to have a negative effect on our export demand, and that could hurt because it'll, especially with the wheat that they're producing over there as well, some of it is feed quality, so that will go into the feed market instead of corn here in the world, so that could slow down some demand eventually, but the U.S. quality of corn and so forth is still a big advantage for a lot of buyers.
And looking beyond the July report to the crop report in August that I always consider to be the first big one, because up to this point we're dealing with history, but in August we'll deal with the numbers that we got this week on planted acreage and that sort of thing. So weather will probably be the big factor.
Weather is going to be a factor. Right now, if you look at the crop today, you would have to say that we're going to have 170, 172 bushel an acre average, which is going to be greater than the trend yield, and that's going to give us some massive corn production numbers. But chances are we probably aren't going to have that. We're going to have average. We got dry spots now. The farmers that are struggling because they need rain. We got guys that are having the best crops ever. So that I think is. Its weather is going to have the impact, and we're going to watch that very closely. That's going to make us very sensitive at the Chicago Board of Trade. So we're going to have price volatility, but we got to use that volatility in our favor as producers.
You have a great 4th of July holiday weekend, my friend.
Well, thank you very much. It's been my pleasure to be here.
Always a pleasure to visit with Paul Giorgi of Allendale, based in McHenry, Illinois.
For more than 150 years, CME Group has been built with your confidence. Without it, we simply wouldn't be in business. Today, we continue to work on new and better ways to protect you and grow your confidence in the markets. After all, it's our vigilance that brings you the peace of mind you need today and in the future. CME Group. Advance with confidence.
Well, after the reaction in the marketplace to what happened following those two reports, it'll be interesting to see what happens to weather over this weekend and what will begin on Tuesday. We'll review those prices for you when we get there. A couple of things I wanted to comment on before I do look at those closing markets. U.S. agricultural groups are pushing for continuing talks with the Democratic and Republican presidential nominees, trying to find out what, if any, farm policy positions they have in the light of the drop in farm income that we're looking for this year and next year. And so representatives of about a dozen trade associations, including the American Farm Bureau and the National Farmers Union, met with staffers for Democratic candidate Hillary Clinton at their New York campaign headquarters. This was the Farm Coalition's first meeting with Clinton's staff. It included discussions of issues ranging from agricultural trade and labor to mandatory labels for foods containing genetically modified ingredients. And according to Jay Broom, chief executive of CropLife America, who was in on the session, said this: all of us agreed on both sides of the table that it is a successful meeting only if it is the first of a number of exchanges. And here is the statement that came from one of the staff members of the Clinton camp. If elected, Hillary Clinton will increase agricultural production and profitability of family farms. How many times have we heard that from presidential candidates over the years? This year, I think it means less than previous years because, frankly, I don't think Hillary Clinton or Donald Trump understand the agricultural community and certainly don't understand the importance of trade. Because when you listen to Donald Trump, he now is saying that he doesn't want Trans-Pacific partnership agreement, but of course Hillary Clinton has also changed her mind on that. Now that she's a candidate, she has said the same thing. But Trump said he doesn't want that. He wants to scrap it. And not only that, he said he wants to go back to NAFTA and take that out of the agreement picture. In other words, he would trash an agreement, I think, that has been working pretty well since it was put in place. So my editorial comment on this to the farm groups: don't expect any real advantages with either one. I don't think either one understands agriculture or the importance of agricultural trade. One other note before we look at markets that could impact your Thanksgiving dinner this year: a barn fire. Last year it was bird flu. Now it's a barn fire at one of New England's biggest turkey breeding operations, killed 7,000 baby turkeys. And the farm owner said that means they won't be able to meet all of their Thanksgiving orders. The fire happened Thursday at Bob's Turkey Farm, a family-run business started in 1954. It killed baby turkeys ranging in age from 1 day to 3 weeks old. So another challenge for, well, at least one turkey grower because of that tragedy. Now let's look at markets. Live cattle futures today fell more than 1%, breaking their longest streak of gains in a month as investors locked in profits ahead of the three-day weekend. And feeder cattle futures also dropped in a profit-taking setback. Lean hogs narrowly mixed in a relatively quiet session. And, of course, packing plants will be closed on Monday, so that impacted the trade today. But the August live cattle contract, $1.85 lower, so it'll start Monday at $112.97 a pound. The contract gained 1.9% for the week, the first weekly gain in 4 weeks and the largest since April. Meanwhile, feeders climbed 2% this week. That's their biggest weekly gain since March. Hogs, though, cash hogs were down again today in the Midwest, and August futures gained 67 cents a pound. But on a continuous chart, hog prices at the Chicago Merc fell 4.1% for the week, its biggest drop since April. So let's take a look at, again, where we'll start. October lean hogs will start Tuesday at $72.12 a hundredweight. August live cattle, $112.97. August feeder cattle, $142.25. Wheat futures sank to multi-year lows today, pressured by the glut of wheat in the world market. Corn and soybean futures also weakened today, setting back from the rally yesterday that did set a two-week high for corn and bean prices. For the week, soft red winter wheat down 7.7%, biggest weekly loss in 2 years. Corn futures down 4.5%, and soybeans were up 5.5%. We are out of time. You have a safe and happy 4th of July, and on behalf of Max Armstrong, I'm Orion Samuelson, saying thank you for joining us on The Markets, sponsored by the CME Group.